Father God, we thank you so much for the word of God and for the wisdom of the Holy Ghost. We thank you, Lord, that we don't desire to hear from man, but we desire to hear from you. Teach us the word, reveal it to us, give every person in this room something that they can use, Father, to be better and to be a better person. In Jesus' name we pray, all in agreement say, amen. Amen. Well, what we're going to do is we're going on the last slide here of chapter 4. That don't mean it won't be 5 more weeks, so you don't know. But I am going to go ahead and take it back from the top just in case we do finish tonight. You all got the context. So again, way back at the top there, we got there is security in wisdom from the Father. That's what I titled is the second slide. What I titled this section of chapter, which is Proverbs chapter 4, there's security and the wisdom from a father, because again, this whole thing is him talking, the wisdom of God talking to a young man or a father, as it were, talking to his son, saying, son, this is the stuff's going to bless you in life, because this is where it works. And see, God knows truth in this example of a father telling him. There's also dual meaning of God talking to us, his children, male or female. This is what you need to do. But literally, the story is a man talking to his son, and he says in verse 1 there, hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give your attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine, which is good teaching. Do not forsake my law. Listen to me. Pay attention. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, my father also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and you'll live. Son, don't be hard-headed. Pay attention. Remember what I told you, because I'm telling you good stuff. If you pay attention, you're going to be all right. You go out there, have to learn through the school of hard knocks, you may not make it through that school. So listen and pay attention, son, because I love you. I'm about to help you out here. He says, son, you got to get wisdom, because you don't know it. You're too young. You got to get wisdom. You need to get the proper way to deal with the knowledge you have. Collect the knowledge, then act like you have it. And then what's going to happen then is you'll get understanding. And when you understand, then you can advise and counsel other people, or you can explain to people better how this works. Understanding what's necessary to explain. If you got a teacher that's got factual knowledge, that's one thing. But a teacher who understands can explain to other people. And a lot of time you have people teaching, they call them instructors, not teachers. They instruct, but they don't understand it. You listen to them, and if you're a little bit not getting it and you ask them, they're like, read the book, go online. That's not a person who really has an understanding. They're like, well, I just repeat to you what it said in the book, but can you explain it to me? Well, I don't really understand it myself. They won't admit that. And in college, they pay people to be instructors. In high school, they're starting to be instructors, whereas you used to get teachers in grade school and high school. But it says, my father taught me, and he said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Get wisdom, get understanding, do not forget, nor turn away from the words of my mouth. That's the father saying, son, pay attention, son. I'm trying to help you out. Verse 6 says, do not forsake her who is wisdom. Don't forsake wisdom. Wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. You get knowledge. That's factual knowledge. 1 + 1 = 2. 2 + 2 = 4. Then you get, you act wise. They give you the test and say, what is 1 + 1? If you write 8, you're stupid. Because you know, you have knowledge that 1 + 1 = 2. You have knowledge that 2 + 2 = 4. And you go putting 10 and 8. That's just being a fool. That is not being wise. Now, if you keep being wise, you begin to see patterns in life. You begin to get understanding. Because my teacher never taught me 581 plus 592. She never taught me that. That was not one of them we went through. I may have never been asked that in my whole life. But because I understand the relationship of the numbers, I can get out my paper, put this one over the other one, put the plus sign, and I can derive the answer. No one ever gave me an answer to those particular numbers. Never. But I got knowledge from 1 + 1 = 2. And after I kept doing that in the 12 tables, I said, man, I kind of understand some about numbers. I understand what that plus symbol mind. I understand how to do that. And although I never had 581 plus 599, I never had that. I can figure that out because I understand the principle. And he's saying, son, pay attention because you don't know. Collect knowledge. There's wisdom and multitude of counsel. Listen to me. Listen to what I'm telling you. Just write it down. Put it on the shelf. Hold on to it. Don't pretend. Don't be arguing. Just hold on to it. Because then you go out and do it, and you'll understand later why I told you that. Because you might tell your kid, look, you know, I could have a whole lot more money than I got right now. But if I was young and I start saving this, you tell that kid that, and they can listen to you. Or they could just do what they want to do and be like, oh, yeah, I got plenty of time. I got plenty of time. And then they 60 years old, facing retirement, got no money. And they dad told them when they were young. But they didn't take the knowledge and attend to his words. They're like, I don't understand how it works, so I don't say what it is. I got it figured out myself. Then you get older and you don't have any money. And that could have been avoided just by listening to somebody that had knowledge. So this is a dad talking. It's not just that. It's like what kind of woman you want to marry or what kind of woman you want to be. A mother telling her daughter, I don't understand. I don't see that. You're too young to know. You're too young to understand. But you're not too young to listen. If they've got good sense, if their life demonstrates you should listen to them, if it's a wiser person and you're trying to learn how to play basketball and Derrick Rose comes and tells you something, you're like, man, I don't do it like that, man. I got to do it like that. You should at least listen. Don't just blow him off because he's where you're trying to get and where most people are not going to get. But if you listen to how he got there and what he thought was important. I remember when I was playing ball, guy was like, man, my uncle played for Xavier in college. And he's on television. I remember watching Uncle Ree on TV. He'd be on there playing, and he was real good. He blew his knee out, so he didn't go pros. But he was real good. And I'd watch him play. And they're like, that's your cousin. And we watched. Then he came to live with us. Not to live with us, but to visit us for the summer. And he stayed for a week or two. And I'm starting to play ball. He's like, man, you got to go. He said, let me see what you got. And he kept pushing me left because my left was weak. You know, generally, if you right-handed, you want to play that strong hand. You always want to go to strong hand. He knew it was a weakness, and he kept pushing me left, and he kept taking the ball out of my hand. And I was getting frustrated. I wasn't falling apart. He said, man, you got to learn to play left. Yeah, but I'm real good. He said, no, once they find out you can't go left, you done. You done, because I used to do that. When I played ball, I'd try and figure out which hand is a guy. If he had a weak hand, I explored it all night long. I was a guard. I just take it out your hand because you can't. You coming up the lane and you can't go one way. It makes it so easy for me because I only have to defend you one direction because you wouldn't develop that hand. And he's trying to tell me that. And I still didn't develop it. I still didn't work on it that much. I preferred my right hand and I could do mostly what I wanted to do. But I would have been limited eventually because you hit the point where somebody's not going to let you get away with that. And there's guys that get super good with their dominant hand, but still by the time you reach the pros, where a person knows what to look for, you're through. You're through. They know you because I knew a guy. I don't care who you were. If you had a weak hand, you wasn't getting by me because I just had my game on. I could move up with it. I knew to watch you, and I put all my blocking on that side. So you can't be good enough with a right hand that a person can't see. You got a weak left hand to see it. And anybody good sense to see, but it's understanding. I listened a little bit. I went out there for a little bit. Like, I didn't want to go through the downtime of being weak with that hand, getting taken while you learn to drive it or practice a whole lot with it. So I'd go back to my strong hand. Now, that was not wise because he knew he played in college. He could play with both hands. And I'm supposed to be learning. And I'm like, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to do this. That's foolish because somebody's giving you knowledge so you know better. Wisdom would have been, obviously, I'm weak there. Let me go do it. And then I go do it. And later I understand why. Oh, yeah, I used to. Yeah, that can't happen no more now. That's what the older person, the wiser person is trying to impute some wisdom to that young person. And that's why people say, don't be hard headed. Don't be hard headed. Your father, your mother, somebody older than you, your teacher talking to you. Don't be hard headed. If their life doesn't evidence what they're counseling in, yeah, they may be fools and don't pay me attention. But since you're young, be quick to listen, because you can always say, I can't use that. But you better make sure you can't use it first, because you don't know what you don't know. And if you don't try it and experience it and not wise with it, you may never get the understanding, because there's people right now that are fools that are still doing the same thing. And they've been told because they never went out and did it. So they still don't understand why. They're just like, yeah, but I can do it anyway. There's some things you can't do anyway. You need to do it a certain way. Need to do it the way it works. So this is a dad loving his son. The parent that loves his child disciplines the child. Look, you need to do this like that. Don't do that like that. That's part of discipline, too. Train them up the way they should go. And it says wisdom is the principal thing. So you got to be able to apply what you know. We know you have to know it, but you got to be able to apply what you know. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And in all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt understanding. Exalt it. Exalt wisdom. And she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. They're telling you right there, son, this is going to take you places. You know, I've had people say, wow, you know, you're kind of sharp. When I was younger, in my 20s, and I could do things and figure things out, knew how to do stuff, could think for myself. People like, man, you're really sharp. In my 30s, the same thing. As you get older, they start expecting you to be like that. But when I was younger, it was a big thing. Man, you got good sense. Oh, you know that. Oh, that's really good. And I noticed that. I knew how to do things, but I listened to people older than me about what to do and how not to do it. Then I was a thinker, so I thought about the best way to do it, understood it, and acted. I got knowledge in a lot of areas. You know, I was I was trying to get a job at Kinko's, hiring in the computer services department. I go there and, you know, they talk to me and I'm talking to the manager and she liked me and all that. And she sent me over to the guy who was over the department, the manager of the computer service department. I talked to him and he liked me. And then, so, you know, they told me what all they're going to do in the first day. And they were saying stuff I didn't know. So I left the interview. I mean, they hired me, but I left the interview and I went over to Barnes and Noble because they were talking about stuff I ain't know, talking about page maker, all this page maker and the graphic layout like that. I didn't really know that. I didn't, especially the program. I knew some concepts, but I didn't know the program. I never used that program for my life. And I left and I went across the street after the interview to Barnes and Noble in Boynton Beach in the mall. And I bought the book on PageMaker 101 or something. I went home and I started looking through that. Next week I started work, so I'm there on the computer and I'm doing things, and little resumes, little light stuff, little graphic stuff, business cards. I'm going on after 3 weeks. He said, "Man, you're really good. Where'd you learn that at? Where'd you learn that at?" I said, "Learn what?" He said, "What'd you learn in PageMaker? You know some stuff I don't even know. Where'd you learn?" I said, in that book. He said, "The book that you brought?" "Yeah." He said, "Well, how did you pass the test?" And I said, "What test?" He said, "Didn't the manager give you a graphic competence test? Because you can't work in the graphic department unless you take competence. They don't waste their time on bozos." But I guess I was a bozo the day I went for the interview, but I got good sense but from reading the book, because he was impressed. And he said, "You didn't take the test?" I said, "No." And then he went and talked to the manager. The manager thought he gave it to me. She thought he gave it to me. And it was God that I got in, and they never knew the difference. They complimented me on how good I knew the pro, and I ended up computer services manager. So when I say I used to manage at Kinko's, I went from just being one who didn't even know how to do the stuff to got in, and 2 years later, I was a computer service manager. So it's like, I never went to school for it. Nobody made me do it. They forgot to test me, but suppose you the kind of person just went there, "Oh, I got the job," and you show up the next day and don't know how to do anything. Then they would have given you the test and you'd have been fired. So can you get knowledge? Then understand and act like you have it, and then you understand, you can teach other people to eventually you become the head of the department. See, that's just a microcosm of life. If you're an idiot, you ain't going nowhere. And when I say idiot, not that you're potentially dumb, we all start off not knowing, we all start off ignorant, but I'm saying it's ignorant to stay ignorant. If you think you're going to go somewhere ignorant, it's not going to work. That's what he's saying. Get wisdom, then get understanding. Get understanding, because understanding is valuable. I know how that is. If you can train other people and you understand, you can take stuff further. Albert Einstein had to understand more than what the physicists before him understood to advance physics. Somebody had facts and he had facts, but he studied the facts more till he got understanding. They took physics and said, I know what E equals MC squared. Energy equals mass times speed. Yeah, nobody else figured that out. He figured that out. Why didn't anybody else figure it out? He's not the first physicist, because he advanced the knowledge. He had understanding they didn't have. Just like somebody understood how to make a computer when nobody else knew how to make a computer. See, you could be the person who understands psychology, philosophy, cooking, sewing, artistry, aeronautics, whatever, is still advancing. Nobody knows everything about anything. It's still advancing. But only people get knowledge, study the field, act like they know what they know and experiment it and do things, and then they get understanding. That's the person who this father wants his son to be. "Son, I don't want you to be unemployable. Son, I don't want to be another bonehead or knucklehead. I want you to be somebody that got your choice of where you want to work. You got opportunity in life. And if you have understanding, knowledge and wisdom and understanding, you have choices. If you do's or don'ts, I do know, nobody want to hire you. Or a very limited number of people want to hire you, and there's a whole lot of limited people trying to apply for them few limited jobs. I was telling the kids today on the way in, I said, you know, people always pay you more for what you know than what you can do. And what I mean by do, I'm not talking about do like leadership, but I'm talking about do is like, I could lift that bell and put it over there. I can do that over there. I can nail that nail all day long. I can screw that thing, bleep, bleep, screw it in there. I work in the auto industry. I can do that. Well, can you figure out a plan? Can you figure out a budget? Can you lead people? Well, I don't know nothing about that. I said, you always get paid more for what you know than you do for what you can do in the sense of manual labor. Manual labor is a dime a dozen. There's a whole lot of people can tow the bell and lift a barge because it's simple-minded. It's no shame in it. Any honest work is good. But people want to know what you understand. People want to know what you know and what you can teach to other people. You can't lead people when you're standing there. What are we going to do next? Because you have to want to think out the vision, think of the way to get there, have the plan, have the goal, be able to corral the people, be able to manage the people, be able to lead the people. There's a lot of people who can preach a sermon who think they call the pastor. The pastor is a whole lot more than preaching the sermon. Your job is probably a whole lot more than somebody across the counter looking at it think it is. They don't know what you do because they don't even know enough to know all you do. People say, I see the pastor on Sunday and Wednesday. That's what they do. I can do that. I said, that's the easy part. It's all the other stuff you got to do. I mean, people bothering you about rent and about payrolls and about taxes and planning and investments and buying buildings and buying land and how much to pay, what not to pay, what kind of insurance you need, what kind you don't need, keeping up with the payroll to make sure the rates are right and you're not going to jail over that. You know, is this a good bank? Should that money be moved there? Should you invest that? Should you say that? It goes on and on to this person say that husband is beating them. What do you tell that person? Don't let him beat you. You know, you got to be like, how do you fix that? How do you help them fix? What does the word of God say about this? What applies? What doesn't apply? What sermon goes? That's a lot to do in almost every job, except you come to work, you punch the clock, and they say, move this pile of rocks over there. And by the end of the day, you can go home. That's an easy job. But they ain't going to pay you much for that job. You're going to work hard. You're going to bust your butt, but they ain't going to pay you much for that job because there's a whole lot of people could do that. But if you're the one to know why we move those rocks and what we're doing with them, you over the company has got all that, and they're building some kind of building and breaking the rocks down, and you get all these peons to break it down, but you're the one to get it all figured where it's going and what combination of these broken rocks with that rock to make cement that's strong enough to hold a bridge versus cement that's only on the sidewalk of a house. You know those things. That's when you get paid. So he wants his son to have understanding. He wants his son to be wise. Any good father or good mother, good parent should want that. You don't want your kid being a knucklehead. You want your kid to have options. That's why you expose them to a lot of different things. My mother and them say they always want to expose us to a lot. One reason we went to Africa, they say, I want to expose you all to Africa. There's a lot of lies been told about black people in Africa. I want to expose you to Africa. So we went and lived in Africa for a year. It wasn't that much. My dad made money going over there because if you had any kind of degree, as long as there ain't no art or nothing like that, but if it's science or engineering or anything like that, and he was in the engineering, you could come over. They'll pay you over there. As long as you stay for 2 years, they pay you, come back, give you a house, a butler, maid, everything. A whole lot of people in America go over there and live like kings and queens. They don't even know it. Because, see, certain folk in this country ain't going to advertise those kind of opportunities because they ain't trying to get that education over there. And some people go over there and don't come back. My dad went over there because his friend went over there in 65 and never came back. He went up Medicus. He just went over there and stayed and just loved it. And he lived into his old age and he moved back. But he was over there for 20, 30 years. Paul Kwame, guy we call Paul Kwame, he left the United States. He went over and lived because it was beautiful over there. You know, you got respect. They taught at the university. My dad probably wasn't even qualified to teach at university level here. But he knew metallurgy and engineering. And he went over there because he had a degree. They put him in and he taught. He was an honored professor and all this stuff. And you ain't all that over here and went over there and lived like royalty. So those opportunities are there, but they don't tell you about that. They just show people, ooga, booga, 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 ooga, and that's what they think you are, where you come from. You know, they keep forgetting the Egyptians were Africans. And they keep forgetting Rome was barbarians and the Greeks were barbarians until they went and stole all the information from the Egyptian library. To those black folk that went and stole all that information, then they came back and they like, we now architecture, civilization started with Greece. That's just a lie they wrote in the book. So that's something people don't want you to know, that you come from a lineage of great people. My mother and them, by the knowledge they gave us, parents talking to their children, imparting wisdom, they told us, they said, you are the best of the best. And you hear that, yeah, it's fine. But then they broke it down. All the weak blacks died in the jungle or died on the boat or died during slavery. If you black in America now, you are the strongest of the strongest. You are the best of the breed. All the weak ones died off. Do you know how hard that boat ride was? I remember being in Africa. We were in Accra, Ghana, and we were at the Amino Castle. The Amino Castle still smelt like slavery. It was just all the people, all the slaves that were taken out of West Africa through Ghana went through Amino Castle. That castle was 400 some years old. Exactly where it was, had the moat around it where they let the ocean in and let the sharks come in. That way the natives, once they grabbed all them Africans and jumped on there, they pulled the moat up and the Africans couldn't come across the shark infested thing because they trying to get their relatives back before they put them on a boat. And they would put them down in a hole, and we went down in there. It still smelled like 40,000 years of funk in there. It's still, because it wasn't but a window that big. And they would shove 2,000 or 3,000 Africans in that one room. The men on this side, the women on that side, and they had the women out in the courtroom, and we walked around the balcony part where the lords would walk around and see who they wanted to sleep with that night, who's going to be their bed warmer. They just took you from your house, take you across the moat, lock your men up, your brother, your cousin, your uncle, put you in a big thing while certain people just walk around and pick which one of you they were going to rape that night. And then throw you back down in the hole where it's 2,000 people there with a window that big. You could hardly breathe in there one person if you all were in the back. What must it have been like if it was 2,000 people in there and you all were at the back wall? And that's the only air hole was that hole. Horrible conditions. But it was getting your eyes used to the darkness in the boat, because Kunta Kinte and all that, they showed them letting them up because they're concerned about them getting exercised. You wouldn't let them slaves up out of there. They stayed on that ship, and if you dead, you dead, and we just throw your body out when you get there. They wasn't unchaining you to come get no daily exercise. It was a 3-week to 3-month ride, and they wasn't unchaining you. You were staying down there, and they would talk about how they packed people, and people would die, and you're there urinating on the people beneath you and the people on top of you. It was horrible. Anybody that was weak died. Anybody that was weak died. Only the strong survived. When you want to have raised quarter horses or raised championship dogs or anything like that, or any championship being at all, you purify them through opposition. And this one is only going to be allowed to breed with that one, and this one will be better. And Master used to do that. This young, strong buck here, put him with this young, strong woman over here, and you're their kids. It wasn't random selection. It was selective breeding so that you'd be stronger. Mentally, physically, every sport they let us in, we dominate. Every one of them. They so afraid we get in hockey because there's a few brothers playing now, and they still trying to keep the brothers out because they know the brothers are going to take over hockey just like they took over football, basketball, tennis, and everything else. If you are superior in your physical build, your physique, because of the challenge, that's it. Now, that knowledge, when my parents are telling me that, look, I'm not going to come up to, I can't make it because, you know, I'm black. The knowledge I had kept me from ever thinking like that. I had to resist thinking I'm better than you are. Not anything about you better than me, because you've been telling me I'm alive, I'm better than you. I'm better than you. Ain't better than me. Anything you put me in and give me equal chance, I'm going to win. Always has happened. They tried to pretend like it was just physical, because we're more like gorillas than animals. But then a black man can't play golf. It's too complicated. Black man can't be a quarterback. He can hit, but he can't think. Black man can't play basketball. There's strategy and plays. Is there one of them where we didn't dominate? Is there one? Well, black man definitely can't coach. A lot of black coaches in NFL now. A lot of black coaches in basketball now. And they found it brilliant. But I always said people made laws. They said you couldn't read, you weren't smart enough, but yet they made laws against law to teach them to read. Obviously, if you make a law against teach somebody to read, you know they can. You just don't want them to know. It's always been like that. You can't make no law. You tell people you can't read, but then you make a law not to teach them to read, but you say you can't read. Which one do you believe? Because there's no need to make a law against teaching somebody to read if you really believe they can't learn to read because they ain't smart enough. They knew it all the time. That has always been done, and that's done now. And young black kids and young minorities having that knowledge, that doesn't make you prejudiced. That puts you back to say I'm as good as anybody else. Because I'm not guilty of teaching prejudice to anybody, but prejudice has already been taught. I'm guilty of unteaching some of it. Okay? Putting it back to where it is. Hey, we are here, and physically we better. You can't complain. Okay? That's just the facts. And mentally, we're as sharp or better. But I think all races have the potential to be intelligent under the same setting because they're human beings. But physically, you know, you're not going to take a Guatemalan and they're going to be a star basketball player. But I'm sure whatever Guatemalan does, the star basketball player ain't going to do that either. You know, the Watusi do one thing and the Pygmies do another, you know. But I'm sure everybody has the same mental ability and capabilities. So my parents teaching me something like that undid all that inferiority complex, shame of being black. That's why sometimes I talk to girls, I say, look, ain't nothing wrong with if you want to straighten your hair, as long as you ain't straighten it to look white. Because you're black. You ain't got to look white. If you want to do that, fine. But you ain't got to do that. Don't do it because you think that makes you prettier. I was listening to Helen's Ladies Fellowship there, which was an excellent message. It'd be online if they hadn't put it up already. But I was listening to it. It was very good. And she was talking about that makeup, you know. And it's like, you know, like I tell people, you got to put your face on, or you got to put Claro's face or Max Faster's face on. Your face was on when you went to bed and when you got up. But somebody convinced you that ain't your face. You got to put, you got to pay for their face and put that face on. Something's wrong with that. And that's being done to blacks, whites, and everybody. That's not the kind of knowledge a father would tell a child, but you do have it now because your mother said, baby, let me show you how do you make up a passage of adulthood, and you show her how to cover herself up. Why, is something wrong with her? If you want to wear makeup, knock yourself out. But to start teaching, girl, you old enough that you got to wear makeup now. Where you get that from? That's not beauty. That's painted canvas. You know, beauty radiates from the inside to the outside. If you eat right and you're healthy, your skin will glow. Do so. You don't need to be no glow max factor. You need to eat right so you can glow. Get yourself some carrot juice or something. Get yourself a warm glow. You know, because you guys, if you juice the carrots like we juice them, you'll be turning orange. You get your glow all right. You know, but stop and think about it. Not following this logic, this rationale has undone it. Somebody else has taught you no matter what you look like, you need to be fixed. Because I was looking at some young girls. We went out to breakfast this morning. I was looking at three young girls. And I was telling Helen, I said, those young girls got no idea. I can't see neither of the three of them. They dress very provocative for young women, and I can't see none of them through the makeup. And one of them had the wrong shade of makeup, and she was trying to paint some jaws on it. I said, your skin has texture and gradients and color in it, but you put so much foundation on that we can't really see you. If you don't put some highlighters, you lose features. She looked like a zombie. It was like she looked like a zombie. And I was like, you know, if you're going to put it on, you need to learn how to put it on, because you put on so much that we can't see the shape of your face. And it just looked odd. But I'm sure she thought she looked good because she's trying to look like Max Factor and Clairol. And they going to put more and more, because you remember when we was kids, they ain't put as much as they put on now. It used to be highlight. They went from highlight to cover up, because literally they'll have you putting it on so thick you don't even see you. And you do look different when you take it off. You're like, wow, people don't even know you. That's, you walk down the street. I was looking at that picture of Mila Kunis because I was Googling Hollywood stars without their makeup. And I'm telling you, Farrah Fawcett could have been sitting right next to me. I wouldn't know who she was. Mila Kunis could be next to me. Goldie Hawn. Half those people they claim look good, you wouldn't even recognize by their makeup. They'd be right next. And matter of fact, they don't look as good as people you see on the street. I said, them some ugly looking people. How they put that makeup on? I mean, Beyonce look good anyway. You know what I'm saying? Beyonce like that. But I'm like, everybody ain't like that. But Beyonce has healthy skin. And if you eat right, you have healthy skin too. But they ain't going to teach you how to eat right. They're going to say, just cover up. Because they make money on cover up. They don't make money on eating healthy. And they make sure they attack anybody to talk about eating healthy, saying, you don't need organic. You don't need all that. You don't need, no, you need this. This is what you need. I sell this. This is what you need. And they make sure those people get, because it's a consumer society. But see, wisdom and knowledge from an older person or a wiser person or a friend the same age as you, but they know some things you don't know, wisdom can help you. It can get you ahead. That's his father saying, son, I love you. I don't want you to make mistakes. I don't want you to learn through school of hard knocks. Save your money, son. Do this. This is a good decision. That's a bad decision. They're not really trying to control your life, but they're trying to give you advice and counsel. And you weigh it and do listen to it earnestly, and you decide whether you're going to do it or not, but weigh it, because it'd be sad to just ignore it. Oh, you old school dad, and just ignore it. And then when you get old school, you wish you would have. Yeah, old school. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom in all thy getting, get understanding, exalt her. She will promote you. She'll bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory. She will deliver to you. Hear my son and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. You can have great, high quality life when you listen to somebody that's wise, because you can learn from the mistakes they made. You can be a young person in your teens or your 20s having the wisdom of a 50, 60, or 70-year-old man. You can take the wisdom of the years he had and listen, and you can jump up to where he's at. Or you can go through all those mistakes yourself to figure them out. Or you could just start where he's at and go forward. And there are some people who are really close to their grandparents, and you see where they get the grandparent put good wisdom in them, daughters or sons, they put good wisdom in them, and you see they're wiser. You've seen, you look at some people like that and say, she's got an old spirit. You ever heard that term? They got an old spirit because they just got grandma and granddaddy wisdom. Like, I mean, the way they talk, some of the foolish stuff young people run around doing their age, they just, you look at them and they ain't even moved by that nonsense. And you see people like that because they're precocious. They're ahead of their years. I say, man, that person's got their head on. You got your head screwed on right, young man. I can see you got a good head on your shoulders. Those are people who have listened to that. They haven't lived long enough to know that, but they've trusted other ones before them. They trusted those who are saying, son, daughter, listen. Listen. And they begin to see the evidence of them having listened. So it said here, I've taught you in the way of wisdom. Did I finish that one? Hear my son. Okay, yeah, let's go there. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I've led you in the right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. That's what they're promising you. If you pay attention to mistakes I made, I'm going to give you the way to get around. See, I run this course before, son. And let me tell you, there's a turn up here. There's a bend there. There's that there. I remember when Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Daryl Earnhardt Sr. You know, Daryl Earnhardt Sr. had run the racetrack and he'd run the 500. He had done all these different races. I'm sure when son started driving, son, now this right here, take that on the outside. Cut this on the inside. And he could do that, or he could do the opposite, make the same mistake. You lose a race like that. Or you can listen to somebody teaching the son, play the golf course, man, the dog leg down there, that's the dog leg left, that turns there, and somebody else talking about, I just play. Then you hit the ball and you're too deep down there. And now you got to make up. Or you could have listened to somebody saying, there's a dog leg there, you want to lay up at 250 yards. You don't want to shoot 300. The next view, which you can't see around the corner, if you go 300, you'll still be on the field, but you can't see the hole as good. And I've been in places like that. You play that and you play it too deep and you get up there and you see what they were saying. I told you not to play that club. That's what dad would say. Tell you not to play a club. That's too long. And you get over there. Oh, I'm going to be fine, dad. I go out there to hit it. You go out there. It's like, oh, okay. I see what you mean. Now, by the time you walk down there to your ball, you're like, okay, the hole is over there and I really can't shoot a curve. So I should have stopped a little shorter. But he played the course before, so he said he's going to do his thing. Now, I normally beat them anyway, so it don't really matter. If I mess up, I can catch up. But I did not pay attention and did make the next shot a lot more difficult and cost me a stroke. If money was on, it'd been a serious thing. There wasn't no money on, and I was ahead of him anyway, so it didn't matter. Probably giving him a chance, but don't tell him. He'll be here in a few weeks. Don't tell him. But if you listen and the person's been there and they've done that, they might know something you don't know. Don't ever cut people off. I'm not telling you you have to listen to everything everybody say. Well, you have to listen, but I'm not saying you have to do it because some people are crazy. But it makes no sense not to listen because you don't know what you don't know till you listen. It's like we said about the message. If somebody's teaching you something, don't criticize it for you heard it. Listen. Be swift to listen and slow to speak. That way you can learn something and you can learn I'm not listening to them, or you can learn I'm glad I listened. If you just like automatically I know everything, pride shall be brought low. Because I can do everything by myself. I want to do it all by myself. I don't want no help. I want no advice. I'm just going to do it by myself because I'm grown now. You're going to go through the school of hard knocks so many times that you didn't have to go through. And that's just foolish to have to go through the school of hard knocks unnecessarily when you got somebody that's willing to give you the lesson so you can test out of that and go right through that, not be held back that number of years, have to start over recreating the wheel. But I've taught you in the way of wisdom. I know you know. I have led you in the right path. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered. And when you turn, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction and don't let it go. Keep her, for she is your life. That's good advice there. Next slide, verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Don't even go down that road. They smoking and drinking and boozing. Don't even start that. You don't have to go through no Alcoholic Anonymous if you don't start drinking. You ain't got to go through no nicotine patch if you don't start smoking. You know, you ain't got to get off drugs if you don't get on drugs. You know, do not enter the path of the wicked. You ain't got to stop stealing or go to jail or prison for stealing if you don't start no stealing. Well, I'm just going to start a little petty theft, just steal a little something here from the store. Bag of chips. I'm going to steal some penny can. I'm doing it. Stealing is stealing. Don't even start it. Because once you do it and get away with it, it entices you in. That's the nature of the beast. Man, that was pretty easy. I ain't say when I was kids, I ain't run with some kids and we stole some chips off the shelf. A bunch of us going to the store at one time, get a bag of chips and walk off. But I'm the kind of person I was raised where it's like, I can't be doing that. So I didn't do it anymore because I felt guilty doing it. It was easy, but I was like, I went against my heart to do it. I went with the group. I went, and after that, I'm like, no, you know, no, I ain't do. Oh man, come on. I said, you do what you want to do. I'll see you in jail, but I'll be on one side of bars. You'll be on the other side, because it ain't worth it, man. I got the money. If I ain't got the money, now I ain't supposed to have it. So I went back to hearing what mom and daddy said. You know what I mean? Because you fool around, get your butt caught, and then you're in trouble then. A little delinquent. That's what you be, a little juvenile delinquent with a record. I'm not worried about those knuckleheads. You run with those fools. I didn't run with them. Like I said, I was in that situation one time. I forget that. I was hanging with some of my buddies, and they go back in the garage, and one dude pull out a bag of weed. He fire up the weed. Oh, man, you ought to hit this. You're going to be live. I said, man, I ain't messing with that stuff. Oh, come on, you're going to be live. Just say no. And then I left the garage. Oh, man, you're a punk. Call me what you want to, but you're going to call me from over there, because I'm getting out of here. Because that's when you don't know who you are yet, and you want so bad to be accepted. Want to be accepted by God. Want to be accepted with the smart group. One big, because that's the people going somewhere. They might be called nerds, but Bill Gates was a nerd. Steve Jobs was nerds. All them dudes were nerds, but now they making money, started big companies. Very often, those nerds are the ones that got the jobs, and some of them cool kids end up working for them, hopefully. Be smart. Always be smart. Always be wise. So we looked at that and said, don't even go in that path. The next verse there, for they, the wicked, do not sleep unless they've done evil. If you get in the habit of doing that, like once people, they're young, they come out of middle school, they don't know what's up. But then you got a crowd. You're going to get in a party crowd that they think they're grown. Now mom and dad ain't watching that much, so they're going to party every weekend, having sex and all this kind of stuff. Or you going to still act like you got good sense and watch yourself? What you going to do? Because that's a pivotal point. That ninth and tenth grade is pivotal. People set themselves on a path, and if you get with that party crowd, because you now, mom and dad ain't babysitting you, watching you, they letting you go out and date now, so now you lost your mind, you having sex, doing all kind of stuff going on, that can start you down a path that can last for years. Before you wake up and say, after 2 and 3 illegitimate kids, all this, you're like, dang, you know, I ain't want all that to happen. And not picking on nobody, all children are blessed the Lord, but like people say, if I knew what I knew now, I'd have done it differently. Because a lot of moms and single dads and all feel sorry that they couldn't offer their kids more. But when you busting your butt working to take care of two people and that third person's missing, it's a little harder for you. Anybody admit that it's harder for you. And a lot of parents do look back and say, I love my child, I'm sorry I had him, but I wish I'd have waited. I wish I'd have established a family first. I wish I'd been a little older and had a little more money in the bank so I can give them a few more benefits. I really wish that. That's all we're saying. You're not saying nobody bad or somebody missed the boat, but you walk in wisdom. Now, that's what a mother and a father would tell their child if they had that baby. Don't go out there running around behind them boys. Because them boys don't want nothing but one thing. That's what my mother used to say. They don't want nothing but one thing. I'd be like, what's the one thing they want, Mark? She'd be talking to my sister now. They got to want one thing. What's the one thing they want? You know, you shut up. But I know what they wanted. I didn't want it, not in the sense that I was about to be nobody's daddy. Because my mother always said, because it was funny, my dad never talked to me about that stuff. It was always my mother and her girlfriends. Every now and then, it'd be the afternoon, and they decided they was in the mood to have a talk. And they pull us off the street, and they going to be old folk. And we'd hate those talks, but, you know, I'm glad we had them. And they call Andy, my friend James. They call me, and they call my cousin and my sister and the girl across the street. And they said, now, y'all come sit here. And here is the 3-4 old ladies. And they wasn't that old, and they probably in their 40s, but they sitting all us kids down. We like, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12. They sitting us all down. They're like, look. Now, y'all run out here behind these little foolish boys, little silly boys. You end up pregnant. You don't need to be coming home with no babies. And then they went on and got on. You need to watch yourself. These boys went on and on. We just sitting there like, we innocent. And they said, don't you be bringing none home or sending none to nobody's house. You keep it in your pants and going on because you ain't got no responsibility, don't have no job and blah, 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 blah. So then we get our part. But all us just walk out there like, but we heard them because we were taught to respect our parents. So we heard them. So when I'm in these situations with these young little girls and they trying to get a brother all caught up, trying to kind of put the name on it and get them all claimed, I'm like, I don't respect that. You know, I have more respect for you before you threw that at me like that. Because I'm like, that's pretty common. You throwing it at me like that, I ain't even asked for it. And you throwing it, who else you throwing it to? I said, that was never a compliment to me only because I trusted what my parents said. My mother used to say, don't be running around them fast girls. She's from Alabama, so you fast. I'm fast behind girls. I'm a little fast behind girls. Them girls out there just want to get a baby, or they out there trying to get you. You a good young man. You taking care of business. You studying, getting good grades. You're going to be somebody. And them little fast women out there chasing you. You know, they always going to have it. But I remember that. I could have ignored it and said, Mama don't know what she's talking about. But my mother never steered me wrong. My dad never steered me wrong. So in my head, I saw that. I was like, I ain't trying to be nobody's daddy. I remember them saying, don't you go out there being nobody's daddy. And that's why I say, I ain't about to be nobody's daddy. I wasn't married to you. I'm in school. My parents paying my school. I ain't about to be nobody's daddy. Whatever you got going ain't worth that. Because that's a lot of responsibility to be a young man with a woman and a baby. And you ain't got no job and no real skills. And you don't want that. Young man, you don't want that. Whatever it is she got, it ain't that good. It can wait. Because you ain't trying to do that. That's not going to be convenient for you. And the same thing to the girl. I don't care how cute you think he is or how nice you think he is or whatever. If he ain't ready to be a man, trust me, you don't want to be with him. Can he provide for himself? No. Yeah, these little teenage boys talk about, I'm a man. You ain't no man. I tell you like my dad told me, you ain't a man till you grown and on your own, paying your own bills. Then you're a man. My dad said, as long as you sitting up in my house, eating my food, you'll never be a man. I was like, that's how it is, Dad? He said, that's exactly how it is. Now, I'm not saying in every situation that applies, but you're not going to feel like a man until you know you're carrying the burden. So if you staying home with Dad and you want to be a man, pay some of them bills. Dad, I'm a man. Which of these bills you need me to pay? Give me the electric bill, Dad. Give me the car. No, now, I ain't asked Dad for nothing. I said, well, I just ain't going to be a man then because I ain't paying the bill. So, you know, I was smart. I was keeping my money in my pocket. I said, okay, I ain't a man. That's okay. That's okay. I'm fine. The girls think I'm a man, so I'm good. But I ain't trying to pull no more to him. But, Dad, I'm a man. You talking to me? Because I think I said something like that. We're doing something. And I got him mad. I said, so, Dad, he's come in the house or something was going on. And go do that or something I didn't want to do. I had something else to do. And he's like, look, son. I said, Dad, you talking to me? I'm a man, Dad. He laughed. You're a man. You're in my house eating my food. You ain't never going to be a man in my house eating my food. You ain't paying no bills here at all, but you a man. How you going to be a man? A man of what? You know? Because you stop and think, a man is known by taking, you might live with your parents, but do you help with something? Man up. Help. Other than that, do like I did. I ain't helping. I'm cool. I'll be a boy for a few more years. I knew what was up. I knew what I was doing. Ain't no shame in the game. I wasn't going to pay this. If he told me to pay him, I would have paid him. Now, I was taking care of me, though. All my clothes, all that, since 16, 17, I do all that myself. He was paying my college. I paid for my car. I paid for my gas. I paid for the girls. I paid for everything. I paid for everything myself, my clothes, everything. But I didn't pay the rent. And I didn't pay the food bill. Even though I ate out a lot, I didn't pay the rent or the food bill. So, but my dad's like, hey, when you're a man, you're pulling your weight. And literally, big parts of weight is food and shelter. And I wasn't paying neither one of those. And I told my boys, you're welcome to stay at the house. As long as you're in school, you're welcome to stay. If you ain't in school, you know, you made your choice. You might want to move. You know, I said, other than that, let's go ahead. Let's do with this. Because definitely you're not going to stay there and not pay for something. If you just like, I've decided I'm going to live, I'm going to live off you. I said, that ain't going to work. I said, now I'm going to start renting that room. I got a rate for that room. We can rent that room for you. And for the right price, I'll let you stay. And for extra price, I include meals. Other than that, you can't eat in the kitchen either. Come over on a holiday. You can come out your bedroom on the holidays. Other than that, you eat in your bedroom, whatever you bought yourself. You can put a refrigerator in there, but no hot plates. Be like a college dorm. But see, my dad and mom would talk to me. And a lot of parents don't talk to their kids. Sit down and find out where your kids are at all times. See which way they're growing to make sure you can train them up in the way to go. Not the way you want them to go, the way God wants them to go. And you need to see where they are because the world will be changing them. And next thing you know, where did my little baby go? That shouldn't happen. You should see them changing so you can help steer them and help answer their questions because the world's answering their questions. The world's straight out saying, this is what you should be doing. After two dates, one date, you should be having sex. This is what you should be doing. You should be doing that. You should be doing weed. This is what you should be doing. You should be lying, cheating, and stealing. This is what you should be doing. The world's educating them. And if you're not aware of what they're learning, they can get out of hand. And they go through those troubled years that they don't have to go through. And a lot of us didn't know and don't know, so that happens. But this is a father taking the time to tell his son, because he says, I know you know. Because I told you, and if you listen to my words, you're going to live. For the wicked, if you end up like that bunch, don't follow them. They can't even sleep unless they've done evil. Because once you get in that habit of that partying, you're in the ninth grade, 10th grade, you got partying all the time, you always want to party. Then that slide into college, and you find a party school to go to. Then you party and party and party. Then you graduate, and you're still partying. And if you have enough trouble in life, next thing you know, you're an alcoholic. All kinds of stuff happens on that road you started when you got from the eighth grade to the ninth and tenth, and you start forming your adult persona as a young teenager, 14 through 18. And then you carry it down to college. You don't want to start down that road. That's why the Bible said, don't even go near it. No smoke. I didn't do no smoking, didn't no drinking, didn't no boozing, didn't no sex around, do none of that. And I ain't missed nothing. I had a good time. And I was cool and I was accepted. Anybody couldn't accept me because I'm not going around sleeping around, fine. But I didn't have a problem anyway because I went to the best school in Detroit and it was honor students, and that wasn't as epidemic as Mumford, the school I was supposed to go to. Mumford High was known as the maternity ward because they said over 80% of girls at Mumford got pregnant by 12th grade. Mumford was terrible. That's on the movie of Eddie Murphy when he was in Detroit. That was Mumford High. That baby blue school, that's the district I lived in. I was supposed to go to Mumford. My mother said, ain't no way, and you go on to Mumford. So I got the bus and went 20 miles downtown to Cass Technical High School. You know, you had to have the grades to get in there, but my parents, it was free. It was back in the day before they were called charter schools, but it was a charter school. And I got on that bus and had to go 20 miles downtown Detroit to go to that school, but that's where the good students, the best students, there were good students everywhere, but the largest percentage of good students, because it was selective by grade, whereas the neighborhood, you end up with super smart people, but you end up with some knuckleheads too. Cass didn't have any knuckleheads. You had to have the GPA to get in. So when I'm in that environment, those kids, many of them came from different types of environments. That's why if you're in the neighborhood, you got to make sure you give your kids the right teaching, because you know what the environment's teaching them. That don't mean you got to move them out, but you got to be a little more careful than somebody who, like, the neighborhood, we moved to Wellington because it's an A-rated school. We're from out of town. We didn't know where to live. We stayed here for a year to figure out where we wanted to go, and I wasn't paying for no private school, and Helen and I looked around. They said, well, that city over there called Wellington have all A-rated schools. I said, well, I ain't paying for no private school, so that ain't happening. So if they got all A-rated schools and move over there, our kids probably going to go to A-rated school because they in the district. And that's why we moved out there. We didn't care about Wellington or nothing. There's beautiful places all over West Palm Beach and Palm Beach County. I didn't have nothing about running from the neighborhood or nothing. I grew up in the neighborhood. No problem with me. But I wasn't paying for private school. And I wanted to do the best I could with what we had. Because she had gone to college and I had gone to school and we had some education, we had a few more choices some people might not have had. So we took our choices. We were making the money. I was managing Kinko's. She was an RN. And we went out there and we put the kids there. And all four went through A-rated schools and they all do good in school. Three of them are in college. One of them is out. Well, one has gone through college, two are in college, and Alicia, and they do well. But the school system did help. It did help. They were out there with kids, focused a little bit more on schoolwork and business work, and parents had a little more time to be with some of them. So all that helped us help them. That doesn't mean you can't make it another way. I grew up and we made it just fine where we were. My mother was a teacher and she made sure I knew. So it ain't got nothing to do with your child gonna fail because where you live. Certain things can help though. That's why I say you put them in programs. Don't give them all that free time to get into trouble. Be wise enough to know what's coming against them. And put them in a sport or put them in something that's going to keep them active. Put them in music lessons. There's places where they do free music lessons. Don't let them just hang out in the street with their friends. Because that's got to be very limited, because that's where they learn the bad habits at. Practice hanging out in the street. You ain't trying to practice hanging out in the street. My mother always knew where we were. Kids would come over our house more so than me going on the block to trouble people's house. She let me go to certain people's house, but for the most part, she kept us nearby, and she had stuff going on, and everybody liked coming to our house and playing in our yard and all that kind of stuff. So she kept us nearby because she had to watch us, make sure we wouldn't get in trouble. If somebody coming out acting crazy, she was a teacher, so she used to some of the bad kids, and we had this one kid, Curtis. He was a bad kid. His mother was a prostitute, and she was johnning right out the house. She'd tell them, get out the house, I got a guest over. And that's the kind of environment they were forced to grow up in. They lived right up the street from us. So my mother, Curtis, would come over, and teachers in school always picked on him. He's a bad kid, troubled kid. But my mother would talk to him. Curtis, now you come over here, but we ain't using that kind of language. Now you promise me you ain't going to say that, and I promise I'll let you stay. Other than that, I'm going to send you out of here. And she'd just be like his mama, just be like a mama would be. So he looked at her, just loved my mother. He loved her because she loved him. She loved him enough to discipline, not let him go wild. And if he started cursing, look, Curtis, she wouldn't be there. I mean, she's about to spank him, but yeah. But I thought she had me thinking she was going to spank him, but it had him thinking she was going to spank him too. So he just loved coming down there because children love discipline. They love the person that loves them enough to discipline them. And people talk about, I want my kids to like me, so I ain't going to discipline them. You want them to hate you, don't discipline them. Yeah. Don't discipline them. They're going to hate you. They're going to take advantage of you. They're going to disrespect you. If you don't respect you, you make them respect you. And then they will respect you and they'll grow up, because kids are out of control and they need help to control themselves. Like I said, you had that child. I was one of them children. You just got all that energy going on. And sometime after you got a good whipping, you felt better. You didn't like to whimper, but all of a sudden you felt like your mind is, I can control my, because you felt like you was out of control. Mom, try not to do it, Mom. I can't help myself. She grabbed your butt and spanked you. And you're like, I'm okay now. I'm good. All of a sudden you could, it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but some of y'all know what I'm talking about. After you get a whipping, you calm. I ain't never want no whipping. I ain't never trying to get no whipping to be calm, but after I got a whipping, you felt like you had a certain amount of control. It's almost like somebody put a limit. Thank you for helping me from hurting myself, Mama. Because I was making bad decisions, Mama. I thank you. You brought me back to my senses. I appreciate that. I wouldn't say that, but you sensed that it was easier. It's like the foolishness was beat out of you. You know, your decisions were already made. Mama said, don't do that. Guess what? I ain't doing that. I ain't even got to think about it or argue with that little voice to do wrong. I just got my butt whipped. I don't want to do wrong. I want to be good. You know, you straighten out. So discipline is a good thing. And the child who was disciplined grows up and praises their parent. The child wasn't disciplined and parent wanted to be their friend. That don't necessarily mean they're going to be, I love you, but. Because they really need the discipline. Children want to be able to control themselves, and foolishness is pent up in the heart of a child. Not wisdom and not knowledge and not understanding. The Bible said foolishness is pent up in the heart of a child, but the rod would drive it far from them. And that's appropriately done, not just spanking kids for no reason. But literally, if a child is disobeying you and outright disobeying you, discipline needs to be applied. It needs to be applied. So let's finish this, and then next week we do a last slide and be out of here. So let me finish reading up to that point. Okay, their sleep is taken away. In other words, you get used to partying. You can't stop partying. You be wondering, you be like, what's going on Friday? And then you start having problems in school. You running with the drug crowd. You can't focus or concentrate. You run with the party crowd. You can't wait to the party. You spend all your money to get some party clothes and some party shoes. Until you going out partying and going out weeding and being with your friends, you've seen kids convert from middle school to high school just like that. Nice kids. And next thing you know, they're crazy. Where'd that come from? They have to do it now. They're into it. It's so exciting. They have to do it. That's why you always moderate that. Hey, who you going with? How long you going to be out? Because our kids got older and started wanting to go places, particularly the girls. You know, Deanna want to go somewhere. Alicia want to go somewhere. Who you going with? We've been over there last week. Tell them I said no. You know, well, you know, but Dad, they go, I don't care. You know, but then say, okay, you can go. Who is it? So-and-so, they there. You know them, Helen? Yeah, I know them. That's so-and-so, so-and-so. What do you think? Yeah, I think they're nice kids. I know their parents. And Helen go over there with them. Sometime I go, too. And we go up to the door. Alicia probably like, why are they dropping me off, you know? And how you doing? It's Pastor and Mrs. Cook. Pastor and Mrs. Cook. You know, this is, you know, we going to be, well, they sleeping over. Well, we be picking Alicia up at 11. Okay. We got church in the morning. You know, sleeping over. We pick her up. I know it's probably crap on her style, but they respect Alicia because Alicia got good sense and they like being around Alicia. All these kids, they just love Alicia. But see, Alicia got good sense. She got good sense. They won't be around people with good sense. They might have decided, say, you got to go home. Your daddy going to make you go home. And she'd be like, yeah, my daddy like that. But she going to love her daddy when she get old. She'd be like, Daddy, you were so good to me. Mama, you and Mama. Because, I mean, they're there. All her track friends know Helen. Helen be riding them around places. Hey, we watching our kids. Like, we watch your kid, too, if they're with us. But we ain't trusting you to watch. We don't know you. You know, there's a few parents Helen have known where we would trust, because there's some just like us. They Christian, too, and I don't mean a whole lot, but we check out what kind of Christian they are. You know, you got to check out what kind of Christian they are, because we had one person I was kind of offended. She talked about she wouldn't let Alicia, somebody wouldn't let the daughter come over because there's a man in the house. So they wouldn't even let the daughter come over because I was in the house. And I was like, oh, you think I'm going to rape your daughter? Come on now. You know, but I respect that. I thought it was a little extreme, but I respect that. You know, but I can kind of see where they're coming from. If you got a lot of young brothers over the house, you know, you send your daughter over there and a bunch of young boys over there and she's sleeping over with them. You don't know how that sister act, you know, I'm concerned about that myself. Helen and I, like, does she have brothers? Yeah, I don't know about that then. How old is the brothers? How many of them is it? Did the mom and dad have good sense, Helen? You know, I don't know. They don't. Well, you know, Alicia, you can't go, or we'll pick you up at this time before they all go to bed. Because I love my daughter, and I'm going to err on the side of protecting her. I don't want to be apologizing to her for not having done a good job. I'd rather say, I'm sorry. I was a little bit firm. I didn't know those people, though, and I need to know them. But I love you. That's why I'm doing this. I'm not trying to cramp your style or mess up, but you ain't going to get into no party mode. We ain't going out partying every week. We ain't partying in the middle of the week when you got school and all that, because you got to pay attention to what's important. You got to steer them through those years so that when they get on the other side, they make good judgments. They make good decisions. For they eat the bread of wickedness. If you run around with crazy people that can't sleep, can't rest, they party every time. And Alicia knows she in high school now. I'm sure she got friends talking about, last weekend we did so. Oh, we went to go see a movie. We didn't see that. And every weekend you hear them talking about it. They're getting old enough now to understand what I'm saying. You got those people that the most important thing to them is the next social event. They ain't talking about school. They ain't talking about I run track. I'm in a club. I'm in the dance thing. They talk about the next social event, the next food gathering. We ain't got nothing to do but get out there and hang out on the street. Not on occasion. That's what they do every weekend. And when you're doing that every weekend, that's foolishness. Going to a party does not make you a fool. You partying every week when you need to be paying attention to something more important, that's foolish. That's too much partying at your age. You know, go to a party here and there. That's part of social development. But if you partying every weekend, be careful, because what's out there every weekend, they get used to. They can't rest till they've had it, and it overtakes them. So I got kids when they're young with the video games. When they got so addicted to video games, we say put that down, do your homework, and they start getting all crazy. Well, I got it. All right, that's it. Take it out of here. And we say no video games except on the weekend. And Bobby and Chris used to get so mad at us. But they get into it, and they want it, that they'd rush to the homework without paying attention because they want to get back and play the video game. We said, no, that's not important. No video games except the weekend. At one time, we had a schedule when Chris was saying, you all, my friends just laugh at us because we go over their house playing games, and we take our piece of paper and to write down so we're not playing too many minutes. Can we say something like, you could play 1 hour per day? And they'd be at their friends, and they were honest. They wouldn't cheat. They would write it down to friend, but what are you doing? I got to write down. And Chris would tell them, my hour's up. And I said, appreciate that. They're honorable. They're honest. And I said, the kids picked on, but we don't care, because Chris don't care what they think of him. Chris, he's got the sense that I want him to have. Don't be listening to no fools. You run your own life. Son, I'm telling you, don't be a follower. Be a leader. You have people following you because the way you conduct yourself. Don't be following every fool out there. If it's somebody got good sense and you admire them, you can follow them. But don't follow a fool anywhere. Lead a fool. Don't follow him. And so Chris ain't worried about that and what they think of him, all that kind of nonsense. Neither is Bobby that I'm aware of. Neither is Deanna or Alicia. Sure, they like to be accepted and all, but not to the point to where they're going to compromise their integrity. They're going to compromise who they are. I said, don't ever do that. That's weak. Don't ever do that. But the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. See, you do that enough from 9th grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, and you start getting out and you don't know why you're struggling in life, why you can't find, you don't know why you're stumbling, because your way was dark. When those years when you should have been paying attention, getting prepared, getting a good grade so you can have good sense, you run into a lot of indecision, a lot of indecisive. This does not make you a bad person. We're not talking about good and bad people. We're talking about advantageous versus disadvantageous. And a lot of times the parents didn't make it to where the kids had the most. My parents used to always say things like, we want to make sure you all have advantage of opportunities. We want to make sure you all had opportunities. I didn't know what they were talking about. But I understood. When I went to college, I could have gone anywhere because I had the grades to get accepted anywhere. I could have gone to Harvard, Yale. I could have gone anywhere because I had the grades. They had done what they needed to do that I could do the work at any school. Bobby, Chris, and Alicia, and Deanna can go any school. They have the grades. There's nothing they can't do. Do they have to work? Yeah, I'm not talking about it's easy, but they have the foundation skills. Helen did a good job working with them on the homework and stuff. I was busy doing the stuff at church, but she did a great job and making sure they got their homework, going to the meetings at the school, following up on all that, making sure they understood it, getting the tutoring help online or whatever. They can do whatever they want to do. And not every kid gets to the 12th grade and know enough that they can do whatever they want to do without taking a lot of remedial courses first. Because they got to go back and catch up for making. You know what I'm talking about? They got to make it. Ain't nothing wrong with them. Ain't calling my dumb or nothing. But you can't do the college work. You have to go take a bunch of remedial classes to catch up. Now, the parent needs to steer them that they're skilled as they go. That's why you don't trust the school to educate your kids. You better make sure your kid's educated. Helen and I, at one time, when Diana started 9th grade, there was some software I bought. It was something like ABC Learning or something like that. And what it was it was software that was written that test and teach kids for the grade level on the national standard, because you don't know that that teacher is teaching right. That teacher may be passing them through, but you know, these kids come home and tell, I got extra points for bringing in cans. Hey, I ain't take you to school to learn how to bring in cans, be no bag person, trying to cash in no bottles and cans. Yeah, I gave us 15 points on the test for that. On a test, they gave you points on a test for bringing in a can? What kind of nonsense is that? I was upset about that. Now, Deanna already had a good grade, but she said, because I was like, how you get 115%? Well, we got 15% for bringing in cans. So that means if you had an 85, a B, they would have told you you had 100% of A. Yeah, that's wrong. Because you ain't got 100%. When you get in the world, you ain't going to go get your paycheck. Say, I got some cans. Can you give me a little more money? That don't work like that. That ain't real world. Nobody going to let you come up with no cans. You bring the work or you don't get the pay. And all that's designed to cripple your kids. The world don't work like that. And school doesn't work the way the world works anymore. They do it. The kids get out in the world and they get shot. Nobody going to give you no extra credit for bringing in no can. You can bring in all cans you want. That's your assignment. But we ain't giving you no extra credit for it. Not on a test. They might say, we'll give you points for something, but not on a test. The test is the questions on the test. Did you bring in a can? Shouldn't be on the test. Because we ain't trying to learn how to bring in cans. So stuff like that, we watch, we monitor, make sure they understood it, and that helps them now. Fathers, mothers, talking to their daughters and sons, imparting wisdom so life will be easier for them. That's what they're trying to teach us here. That's the love of a parent to a child. Tell them good information. Don't be afraid to tell them mistakes you made if they're old enough to receive them. This is something I did and the devil took advantage of me. And I'm a witness to you. You don't want to go that way. Them little boys will lie to you. See that girl will lie to you. All she wants is another baby. I said, you're a nice young man. You're a handsome young man. You're a smart young man. You're a good catch. You better watch yourself. You ain't going to be on out there for every little girl out there think you cute. Does she bring you something to the table? If not, tell her to beat it. I love you from over there. You ain't got to marry everybody you love. You better marry somebody that can help you. I said, like I said, my wife, I brag on her all the time. She brings a lot to the table. She wasn't sitting out there waiting for no man to come rescue her. She had her degree. She was making more money than I was because she was an REN. She had her stuff. She was going through life just like she was going to be by herself. Never wanted to be by herself. Wouldn't want to be by herself, but she was going through life preparing to take care of herself. She wasn't waiting on some man to come rescue her. Those days are over with. Most men, if you got good sense, looking for somebody to bring something to the table. They don't have to go out and work, but they need to have skills. Because you got girls come to the table with nothing but a body. That ain't going to work because that's going to get old. Ain't bringing nothing to the table. And got it all out there for you to see, too. Look at this. Look at that. Look at that. Bam. Is that enough for you? And you're like, ain't enough for me. You got anything up here? And you ain't got to be a genius. Just don't be stupid. I ain't talking about no genius. You just don't be stupid. You ain't got to be a straight A student. Just don't be stupid. Because some girls are stupid. Some guys are stupid. Don't be stupid. I can't do nothing with stupid. I'm not stupid for you. Why you want to be stupid for me? We don't go together. I ain't trying to be old stupid, though. So, you know, be that person who deserves that person. Because I'm always going to teach you to be your absolute best. I'm never going to leave you alone with just okay. Always be your absolute best. Always work to be your absolute best and demand the best. Be the best, demand the best. Pastor Butler used to say when he said he was doing counseling, singles counseling, he talked to all these guys, talk about, and I want a virgin, I want a virgin. He said, look, you guys need to just stop. If you ain't a virgin, don't be demanding no virgin. You don't deserve no virgin. Because they run out there, and I want a girl that's a virgin. I'm a girl that, you want an untouched one when you've been touching everybody. Come on now. You've been touching everybody and talking about, I want an untouched girl. Well, you should have kept your hands off some of them. That's crazy. Pastor Butler used to get all over the single men about that. I said, you know what? It makes sense, though. You out there wanting somebody to be better than you. What did they do wrong that they want to get you? You make sure you get your mate and you step up your game if you want a good mate. So otherwise, they're going to leave you anyway. You know, when they find out you ain't got good sense. You stop at wherever you want to stop. I'm not setting a limit. I'm saying you make sure you don't think life is going to give you more than you're giving to life. Make sure you understand life. God promised you to give you your mate. If you believe God for a mate, and your mate is your match. So believe God for your match, but be worthy of that. You want a Christian? Be a good Christian. You want a good man? Be a good woman. You want a godly man? Be a godly woman. And vice versa. That's all I'm saying. Because that's the way life works. Life gives to you what you put in it. It don't give you what you ask for. What you want, it gives you what you put in it. Life is very fair. It gives everybody what they put in it. And sometimes people don't put enough in it. If you sit around and make excuses for why you don't, instead of walking in wisdom and knowledge and listening to folks who know, you know, we listened to Boo Boo the Fool on the street telling us how to stay married and he'd been divorced 10 times. You don't pay them no attention at all. I'm not saying put nobody down because of it, but you got to take it with a grain of salt. Some people learn from their mistake, but the ideal is it's best to find somebody that didn't make it. I used to tell the people, like they say, we had an argument in Bible school in our clothes, sitting around the table. Bible school's out. We all in the lunchroom. We sitting around there at Rhema talking. And I was telling you, they were all, this girl and this guy and me, and we sitting there talking, and the two of them talk about, well, you know, it's like, I wouldn't want nobody, ain't been through nothing, and ain't been through this, ain't been through that. And I'm sitting there like, I told them, I said, well, you know, according to what y'all talking about, sex and drugs and all that, I ain't been through nothing. And they trying to say, like, and I said, am I hearing you all say that there's some benefit in sin? That, well, I don't want no pastor ain't been through something because he don't understand. I said, well, I guess Jesus couldn't pastor you. I said, and this came to me by the Holy Ghost with God trying to give them wisdom, because I never really thought about this before, but it came out of my mouth to them. I said, first of all, there's no benefit of sin. And second of all, do you want to know what's it like to be in sin? And so, if so, find a sinner, they know. If you want to know what it takes to get out of sin, it's the same thing it took to stay out of sin, and somebody that hadn't sinned knows that. Now, what do you want to know? Because there's no benefit in sin ever. A pastor who's been through a bunch don't know no better than the other one, because the other one still need to learn what that pastor already knew, how to stay out of it. When people are tempting you, tell them, no, I ain't doing that. I'm sticking with the Lord. Because that's what's going to get you out of it, is you're going to start saying, I'm going to stop sticking with the devil. I'm sticking with the Lord. Now, the person stayed out of it knows that. The benefit was never in the sin. There's no, but that's an ungodly statement to even think there's benefit in sin. Yeah, but I'm glad I learned those lessons. You should learn them from somebody else's experience. God has not said, now, if you go out and learn all these lessons, then you can come back and see the word is true. No, he says, follow my word. It will protect you. It will keep you. It will protect you from going through the pain of the lesson. Just trust in the Lord, not lean on your own understanding. I'll make your path straight. Think about that, because a lot of people actually are deceived into believing that that's, that's why I mean, at one time before I got in ministry, the Lord's calling me, I kind of pray a little bit, like, you know, kind of felt guilty. I ain't had that testimony, because all these preachers get up and get their testimony about all they've been through. I was on drugs. I slept around. I did all this. But then God delivered me, and they all had these testimonies and all that, and it seemed like that's what you were supposed to have. They all were bragging so much on all the sin they've been in when they ought to be ashamed to tell somebody that. Unless it's for a ministry purpose. You know, I was a devil. I was crazy, you know. That's not necessarily a good thing. Give God glory for what God did, but mineralize the devil part and just say, Jesus saved me from my sins. But when you start glorifying, like I said, you can always tell when they get that testimony for 20 minutes and it's 18 minutes of the sin, and then they say at the end, but Jesus saved me. That's the wrong way to give a testimony. Because, you know, they have, man, I had me a different girl every night, man. And I was doing it. Me and my boy be smoking, man. We was in the, up at the park. We just party every. I mean, they, you can tell they're excited, going right back to it. Then the end, but Jesus saved me. You know, almost like, oh, you sound disappointed about it. Yeah, I see. And you know, folk be giving testimony like that. And the congregation be wanting them to give a testimony like that. I want to know everything you did. You and her did what? Say that part again. Repeat that again. They don't remember that Jesus saved me part. They was interested in all that sin. You had a different girl every night, man. Dang! You did what? She did what? You what? No, you kidding. I mean, you ain't listening to Jesus save you part. Yeah, how do you get no testimony? I said, my testimony is I was raised in church, and thank God it took. And the Lord protected me from this. My biggest challenge was having potential but not knowing what I wanted to do with it. Because I tell people, my testimony is, I knew I could do anything, but I didn't know what to do. So I was going into medicine because money was in it. And then God called me and rescued me from purposelessness and said, this is what I've called you and kept you for. Go minister to other people. Show them how to live pleasing to me. Ah, now that's good. So God rescued me from purposelessness. That's a good testimony. Jesus was found at 12 years old, running around finding his purpose. And he discovered himself. Studying in the scriptures, he discovered himself. At 12 years old, he discovered himself. Jesus didn't have to go through no whole lot. Jesus was tempted, tested as we all are, but without sin in every account. That's who I want to be like. And that's who you should train your kids to want to be like. The testimony's not in. Go through all the hell in the world so you can build a good testimony. It's a great testimony that the Lord kept me. I was raised in church. If I wasn't raised in church, it'd be like the rest of them folk running around Detroit. But I was raised in church, and what the Lord taught me, I'm a testimony that if you listen to the wisdom of your mother and your father, you ain't got that testimony of all that hell you went through. That wasn't fun. A whole lot of folks will tell you it wasn't fun when you find out you're pregnant and you got to go home and sell your parents. You find out you got somebody pregnant and she looking to you to take care of it and you so scared. You talk about, you sure it's mine? Yeah, people don't tell you all that scary part about it. It makes it sound like it's all romantic and it's good. Uh-uh. Sin have torment. That is not a fun thing. You think her brother going to beat the stew out of you next time he see you? You don't know what's going on. Her daddy looking for you. He know where you work. Mr. Johnson come and look. You don't know what's going on. Then people forget all that. They forget you being scared. They forget all that. They just make it like it was all so wonderful. Sin, there's no benefit in it ever. And if you can save a child from sin, do it. They ain't going to be mad at you. I'm not mad at my parents for keeping my butt out the streets. I'm not mad, but I ain't had no joints, don't want no joints and drink no alcohol. I ain't mad about none of it. I don't miss it because I ain't started. I didn't have to give it up, get unaddicted from or anything. That's the testimony I want my kids to have. That's what you should want your kids to have. Never let Satan lie to you about letting him have your kids for a few years. That'll make them stronger. Let your kids run around sinning for a few years and learn how bad. That ain't no way helping them at all. No way is that. But you want to protect your kids from that. You want to love them enough like this father. Listen to me, son. You're going to have a good life. Because some of those kids that go visit the devil for a few years don't make it back. They don't make it back. They die out there while they visiting him, building their testimony. And we don't put it like that, but that's what, if you think there's some benefit in it, I'm sending my kid to boot camp, send them to Satan boot camp, because that's going to make them stronger. I always tell people when they talk about sin, well, you know, the Bible says that you tested, you tried, it builds courage. I said, no, you don't have to sin to build courage, because they take our first, they take James 1 and misquote it. What's, how's that phrase go? You recall that, Helen? James 1 talks about, know the trying of your faith worketh patience. I ain't got to have my faith tried to learn patience. I can just be patient. You know what I'm saying? But what they do is they take that context and think that's the way God teaches patience is by trying your faith. Life will try your faith. And, you know, when folks are trying you, you got to be patient. That's not saying go find somebody to try you so you can learn strong patience. That's where they teach it, but that's not what it's saying. It's saying that the trying your faith will cause you to have to be patient, not you learn patience by trying your faith. So make sure you go around as many people as you can to try your faith. Otherwise, you ain't going to have strong patience. That's two different things, people. The cause of you getting strong faith is getting places where it's tried. No, they're just saying the trying of it will make you see the necessity of it. It'll make you have it. It's not like going to work out my patience by going to find somebody to test me. Nah, you ain't looking for no test, temptations, or trials anywhere. Jesus wasn't looking for none. He looked at the word, and he obeyed it. If you do that, you can have all the patience you need. But yes, people will try your patience. You develop it, the world's going to try it. But don't go out talking about trying is what you need to develop it. That's not what it says. And that's what people teach. I've almost exclusively only heard it taught like that all my life in church. Trying for your faith, work of patience, you know, like it's a good thing. No, I already want to have the patience. You try it all you want. Ain't going to change me. I don't want to be talking about, oh, it's good to have your faith tried. It's good. No, he didn't say that to say it's a good thing. He's just saying, if you got patience, this life going to try it. You're going to see, the life going to see what you got. That's totally different from saying, go get your faith, patience tried so you can be strong in patience. Go get your faith tried so you can be strong. That's the way to get strong, is to get your faith tried. No, your faith, your patience needs to already be there. And then when people come test your faith, that will test your patience. Not how you grow it. That's just what's going to happen. That's like saying, know how to deal with the military. When you go in the military, they teach you, they do the drills in boot camp. And a gun, they'll fire a gun over your head, ta-ta-ta-ta, or blanks or whatever. And they teaching you, as soon as you hear the first tat, drop to the ground. Don't be like, where'd that come from? They teach you, soon as you hear, pop, you hit the ground. You fall straight to the ground. Soon as you hear the first shot, you don't be like, pat, 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 pat. And then next thing you know, you dead. They teach you, why do they teach you that? Because they don't want you to be tried. The shooting at you tries your ability to duck. They want you already know how to duck because you're going to get shot at war. They don't want to have you go to war so you can learn to get shot at and duck. You learn to duck first. You learn the patience first. Because that's going to happen, you don't go get that to train you to do that. You see what I mean? It's good for you to be patient because you know your faith is going to be tried, not go out and build your patience by being tried. Two different things. But we're going to go ahead and close there. And now we'll pick back up and I'll read those other two pages down and then we'll teach the last page. But are you guys getting anything? We went through it so slowly, I have to go back and get it back in context a bit. And remember, we ain't got nowhere to go but heaven. So we ain't in no hurry. We're taking our time. Soak it all up. You ought to be able to quote Proverbs 4. Or at least definitely if you hear it, you'll be, that sounds familiar. That's from Proverbs 4. I know what that is. That's over Proverbs 4. Now, wouldn't it be nice if you knew all 31 chapters of Proverbs like that? Because we went 5 years from 1 through 17. I think we're going to have to go look at my notes and see where we are. So we actually did this a long time ago because we went for 5 years, but we were off for like 5 years. But we'll pick back and eventually I'll get back to where we left off at and we'll go forward. But I may jump around a little bit more before that, if you don't mind, because it bears repetition and you got to get it and you got to chew it and you got to eat it. And faith come by hearing. So hearing it again ain't going to hurt you. Now, I ain't going to teach the same thing in here. We'll go on. But hearing some of that stuff on co-assignment, some of that stuff you all missed because you weren't there at the time. But all that bears repetition. The word is so good and we just soak it in. I hate flying through stuff and people don't remember it. I teach like you don't go home and study. That way you're going to know it anyway. If you teach like everybody go home and study and they don't know what you said. They don't know. You change the title, preach again, they don't even know. It's the pastor, best teaching you ever did. That's the same thing I taught 10 years ago. You know, but they don't know. But I want to be able to say, I heard that before, and that's good. Did you learn it? Are you doing it? Do you need a little refresher course? And then we go forward. It's important what you know, not the volume that you get, is that you understand what you got and that you really get it. And I think you guys know the main text over and over. How many people know what the key text is? And you know Proverbs 23:7 from Sunday morning. You know these things because I'll say them over and over and over. And if you don't know the verse, you know it if you hear it. Or you know it when you need to live it. That's what I want you to do. I want you to know the word, not just hear a bunch of the word. I want you to know it. So repetition is the process of learning. Repetition. Let's close in prayer. Father God, thank you for the word today and for the wisdom of the Holy Spirit. I thank you that you're teaching us, directing us, and guiding us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.